Welcome back to The How, Channeling Water Solutions, a podcast from W12 Plus program. The How focuses on water solutions and the people behind them from around the world. In this third season, we are excited to bring to you a series of 6 episodes highlighting locally led organizations and their work in water, sanitation, and hygiene across Ethiopia, Ghana, and Uganda.
Each episode brings a story of a local organization and its people. The stories highlight pressing water challenges in their communities and how these locally led organizations are addressing them. They are locally led, community-driven water solutions.
I'm your host, Kajal.
And I'm your host, Anna. Kajal, in this episode, you spoke with Godliver Busunge and Comfort Hajra from Uganda Women's Water Initiative, also known as UWI. Can you tell us a little bit about UWI and their work?
UWI works with rural grassroots women and girls across Gomba, Butambala, Mukono, and Kaborole in Uganda. They work in water, sanitation, hygiene, wash, research, climate change programming, community mobilization, and integrated programming. UWI is a community-based organization empowering women and girls as WASH solutions provider in the face of climate change. The UWI team speaks multiple East African languages and has years of experience working with rural communities. UWI is therefore uniquely positioned to assist community-based organizations and institutions with stakeholder research and accessing local knowledge.
Thanks, Kajal. Let's listen in and learn a bit more about Uganda Women's Water Initiative.
Godliver, would you please introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about the background of how you started your journey in the water and wash sector?
Hello, everyone. My name is Busunge Godliver. I'm a co-founder of Uganda Women's Water Initiative, based in Gomba, Uganda. A bit of my background and how I joined the WASH work. Growing up as a young girl in a rural village in Kibale district, Uganda, I grew up hustling with my mother, walking long distances in search for water, and also walking long distances in search for firewood. I grew up in an environment where a father would not support a girl child to go to school. They would rather have you stay home. So in most cases, I would be late for school. I would be flogged at school. And also I grew up in an environment where my father would abuse my mom. So as a young girl, seeing what my mother was going through, and I remember vividly one time when she didn't have a shed where she can cook food from, and the sun would hit her because she would cook in the open and also the rain. I have brothers, I'm the last born of 6, but I remember going to the bush, cutting logs and kind of coming up and making up a shelter for my mother to be able to cook safely. So I knew all these problems are not happening and they're not affecting me, but they're also affecting other young girls in the community and other women. So my passion, I realized I need to work hard, do male courses, because we were believed as women, we cannot do engineering courses. So I believed I need to challenge gender stereotypes, take up men courses, like construction, learn how to build different water sanitation and hygiene technologies so that I can be able to pass on this knowledge to other young girls in the rural communities and also women so that they don't have to go through what my mother went through. And I think that was my inspiration of getting into this water work.
Thank you, Godliver. It's such an inspiring story that you just shared. We also have with us Comfort Hajra, who just joined us. Hajra, would you like to share a little bit background about yourself and how you got involved in water and wash work?
Thank you very much. My name is Comfort Hajra Mukasa. I was born at the border of Uganda and Congo in a small village called Goli Mix. So in Goli Trading Center, we had boreholes, but we also had a stream that separates Uganda from DR Congo. Now, the borehole was shared with students and the villages. And being a young girl who had the responsibility of fetching water, my mother's firstborn and myself, I'm secondborn, we're both girls. So that meant we had to fetch water, clean the house, while my mother hustle to do trade across border to make ends meet. So one time when we went to Nyebola, that stream, it's still there. I went with my friend Winnie. So we were three girls who had gone to fetch water in Nyebola. And then Winnie fell in the stream. But we were so young and stupid to realize that when someone falls in a stream and they're not getting up, they could be in danger. So we sat by the stream waiting for her to get up. But then she never did. So when a woman was crossing by the bridge and asked us what had happened, we told her we were waiting for Winnie to get up. And she never did. When she was gotten out of the stream, she was bleeding and she had drowned. But we didn't know she had even drowned and she died. Then I developed a phobia for water. And to date, I can't swim. Each time I enter the water, it's just the memories of Winnie. So then growing up, of course, we'd still fetch water, but I would always freak out fetch water from a stream. So I would still do go rounds. And interestingly, my follower, who is just 1 year younger than me, would sit as we fetch the water. Even when we were big, as in senior two and he's in primary seven, we'd still fetch the water. So I decided I got a small dream. My dream was to have a rainwater harvesting tank so that I didn't have to continue going down the stream. I didn't know how to get the rainwater harvesting tank, but I knew someday I would know how to do it. So when I joined university in 2001, I was given a nursing course. I did the nursing course for one semester and dropped out because I discovered that Makerere University had introduced a new course that does water sanitation and hygiene. It was called public health. So when I dropped out, I crossed to that course and I did my first training in environmental health sciences where I learned about water sanitation and hygiene. But my passion was just not being watching anyone else of the fear of ever dying in water or seeing someone else die in water. Unfortunately, that fear lives with me to death because I still can't swim. I just can't get into a water body. The only time I interact with water freely is when I'm under shower. Gulliver makes fun of me that I don't like to bathe. I like to bathe, but I just don't like a lot of water. That's how I picked interest in wash works. And I got the training. Now I can do the work.
Thank you, Comfort, for sharing your story. And thank you, Gulliver, to you too. So can you both now tell us and our audience a little bit about Ugandan Women's Water Initiative, which is known as also UWI? What projects or what initiative your organization works into?
I'll go first. So Uganda Women's Water Initiative, like the word goes, is an initiative that brings together rural women with the purpose of turning them from water sanitation and hygiene burden bearers to water sanitation and hygiene solution provider. And why Uganda Women's Water Initiative? Me and Godliver met up in 2011 at a fellowship. So as we've told you the story, we told each other our story. We decided that we would come together and come up with a center that would bring women together, skill them to be able to provide their own water sanitation and hygiene solutions. And we wanted something that it was not limited by language, distance. So we decided to do a skills-based training so that even a woman who has never interacted with class does not have to worry about the angles, the degrees, getting it right. And so we decided to work with rural women, starting our drive from Gomba District. Gomba District being a place that is a cattle corridor with very great challenges of access to water, where women and girls have to trek in some instances, distance of beyond 3 kilometers, especially in a dry season, to access the river that never dries up called River Katonga, while getting a lot of exposure to violence in the process, but also instances of kids being run down by vehicles while crossing the road. So what we specifically do is give women the knowledge and skills they need to build their own water sanitation and hygiene facilities, but also work with children in school so that they appreciate what Godliver said, that it's so even a woman can build, even a woman can build, a girl can build, and that the knowledge that we had, especially in the molding of motor jars, can still propel us to access water services and such sanitation services, whether the men give us the technical support or not, making sure that our lead trainer is a woman, Godliver, and then I'll let her to speak. I'll let Godliver speak about how the training actually happens. Godliver, over to you.
Under Uganda Women's Initiative, we We do different kinds of projects like water sanitation and hygiene, specifically in construction of rainwater harvesting tanks using interlocking sterile soil blocks, which are eco-friendly. And we also do biofilters for clean, safe water. This is just a mold 10 years guarantee, and a household will have clean, safe water. Then we also do managed sanitation facilities like eco-san toilets, ecological sanitation facilities that can be re-emptied and later used in farms. We are also into environmental conservation, given that now climate change is a huge threat to globally and also to the women that we are working with. Then also we are training women in climate smart technologies, leadership, and entrepreneurship. In entrepreneurship, specifically eco-entrepreneurship, any business that a woman has to do has to be eco-friendly. And also what I can add on the Women's Water Initiative is that we are unique. We are limited by language. I know Comfort always wants to say this. I think I forgot about this. But every community that we go in, we make sure we use the language that someone can really understand so that it's not a hindrance or a sabotage for a woman to participate in this training. And also being deeply rooted in communities really gives us mileage, because we know what really happened, and we working with the women to understand what are the real root causes or what are the pressing needs on ground, and implementing this gives us mileage, sustainability of projects and ownership. But also what we really do in UWI is working with local government, closely with local government. This has really given us mileage, whereby even if we are not on ground, projects are going on, local government is intervening, supporting when it comes to training. So this is what I can add on.
Since you mentioned you are deeply rooted in the communities and work with local government, what are some of the biggest water-related challenges you see at local and regional level in the areas that you operate? And what are the root causes for these challenges?
One of the main challenges is the distance that women have to walk for water, the water location. So when our water is being sited, the policy states that a water source should ideally prioritize an institution, so say a school or a healthcare facility. And so the siting of the water is not in consultation with the people that will have to look for this water. And so in as much as when you look at the water atlas, for instance, if you look at a district like Gombe, if you go to the Uganda Water Atlas that you can access online, the percentage access you see there is a wrong perception, because even the broken water sources include the access figures you see. But the access figures also don't talk about distance. So what happens in the process is that women are trapped into energy-driven poverty. Because if I'm going to take an entire 1 hour on just one route of water, and I have a family of six that needs six jerrycans of water, then I'm going to spend 6 hours of my time fetching water. Then when do I ever have time for productive, to do anything productive as a woman? But that also goes to the girls, because the role of fetching water is not just on women, also to the girls. So the location of a water point is just not right, because it does not consider how much the burden bearer of the water access will have to bear. The other challenge when it comes to water is the technology options that we have. We rely so much in this country on groundwater, but we also, the same country also uses pit latrines as an option for latrines. And it's no wonder that you'll realize that about 80% of the water points in the settings where we work have E. coli. And it's no wonder that we still have diarrhea as the leading cause of morbidity in the areas where we work. For starters, in Uganda, 33 children die of diarrhea every day. That's not a nice statistic. And where we work, it's even worse. And then women are still dying due to sepsis because of the access to water. And yet the statistics in the Water Atlas that speaks to the outside world gives a deception that the facts are right. And so the access to water is a challenge. The quality of water is a challenge. And then the other challenge that we have is the inclusion of women in operation and maintenance and in management of water services. Because if the women are the ones that are really going to use the water, and then we are not including them in the management of the water services, then whatever decisions are made on behalf of women, for women to live with. So, and the root cause of these challenges is the limited involvement of women. When the policy says that operation and maintenance, the water user committee should have women holding at least key positions. But this is when the water has already been sited. So the root cause is the limited involvement of women and girls in planning the designs and location of water points, but also the limited prioritization. It's common to hear someone say that, oh, WASH is a key driver of development and public health. But then the priorities that are given to WASH leave you wondering if we actually mean that. The priorities, even when it comes to public health, primary health care funds allocation, the non-wage bill says only up to 30% can go to disease prevention, health promotion, and WASH. So 30% going to all that. But when the policy says up to, that means that it could mean zero. And yet the management of the health budget is not a preventive person. So it all goes back to the limited involvement of women into planning, the prioritization, and then the operation and maintenance. Who takes lead in that?
I would just add on another huge challenge being climate change, which has really caused extreme weather events such as drought and floods. And in the areas where we work, like droughts in Gomba and Butambala, are really huge, affecting women, affecting communities, and more especially women who are most vulnerable. Because like she explained earlier, if it comes to fetching water, they have to walk long distances in search of water. And also in Gomba, we have a lot of places where women collect water that are open valley tanks, which are easily contaminated when floods come in. So this is like a source of healthy problems or healthy issues like diarrhea. So climate change has really been an issue, and I think people are not aware, like some people are still not aware of what they have to do in order to cut down this challenge. And so as Uganda Women's Water Initiative, we have come in to educate women and the community on environmental conservation, and at least have the knowledge on the basics of what really climate change is, what do they have to do to cope up.
Both of you touched on many important issues: climate change, gender, the designing of the solutions. Before moving to climate change, I have one last question for the community and the challenges. How are they involved in developing solutions, and how have their life changed over time through the solutions?
Working with Uganda Women's Water Initiative in partnership with government, what we do is we hold what we call community dialogues. In these dialogues, we agree on what we should do and where we should do it from. We also seek to appreciate the available indigenous knowledge that they have. I hinted on something called mortar jars. So this is something that used to be molded long time before we almost abandoned the knowledge. The biosand filter that Goliva is talking about, we used to use such technologies. They are low cost. They can use local available material to come up with them. So the involvement is we hold community dialogues. When we hold these dialogues, we pick up what is known and then come up with what we can do with whatever we know, so that whatever we introduce in communities is something that can be upheld. But also, we also realize that when people come from what they know, the indigenous knowledge, it's easy for them to scale up the knowledge that they get. Another way that we get these communities involved is we do, especially when we're doing the construction, it is very participatory. We allow women to come and be part of the construction. Like right now, we have a project that we're working on, and the women do the actual construction so that they can feel that they can actually do this. And then they get to believe in themselves that they can do it. We also use the locally available material so that people know that these things are within our midst. We can use them. So the involvement is not just conversation. The involvement is we need to make decisions together. We need to decide on where we'll get the material. We decide on who will take care of what we start together, and then how we scale what we start together. But then government having the technical oversight to continue providing the supportive supervision, because without the government buy-in, whatever we introduce may never see the light of day.
I'll just add on the issue of how we get them involved is through capacity building, because Uganda Women's Water Initiative got an opportunity to have a trainer who trained our women in business plan development and management. And at least all the women we work with, over 150 women, have successful businesses that are thriving. So involving women and making them earn an income to be able to take care of their home, keep the children in school, that means we are empowering them and giving them that confidence to thrive, even with the changes with today's changes. And also, the women have also formed groups that have really fully been registered. So they have formed their own initiatives that they can lead, fully registered, and this has enabled them be able to even acquire government, be able to tap into government opportunities. In Uganda now we have what is called the parish development model, where women can be loaned a seed grant, a revolving loan, and then later on pay. But because they are organized and have formed their own respective groups, this has enabled them, to continue thriving and engaging in this initiative.
Sorry, I thought Godiva will talk about the satellite. So the other approach that we have for involvement, I think, so that we don't lose it. So what we do is when we are involving communities, we don't go and start up an office. It's expensive, it's a waste of resources. So we go to a setting within the community and we come up with something called a satellite. It's a center where we all meet, have conversations, develop solutions, and always have a reference to that solution. So Godiva said this, she used the word deeply rooted. That's what deeply rooted means for us. We don't want to create distance of sitting in air-conditioned offices while the people we work with are down there. So we find it can be someone's home, it can be a community center, a center where everyone has free access to knowledge, have free access to raising their voices and meet and speak, like Godiva said, in the local languages. So our involvement does not have a lot of hierarchies, but we make sure that everyone is meaningfully involved while you're taking care of making sure there's safeguarding going and everyone's opinion is respected and everyone is valued.
Well, seeing this collaborative, creative solution is very, very motivating. And what role does indigenous knowledge and traditional water management system plays in water solution in the work that you are doing?
Wow, thank you. So indigenous knowledge plays a very huge role. One, indigenous knowledge to us has proven to be the foundation of our innovation. Because then we don't have to, there's something that is already known, then we build onto that. Traditionally, in Africa, we used to use, when we knew that water needed filtration, we would get a cloth, use a porous pot, filter through. Then eventually, people read books, called it the three-pot system. So we ride on such to improve and have things that eventually grow. And when the people that read books put it in books, they call them biosand filters. But traditionally, that's in an indigenous knowledge, that we use buffers, including charcoal dust, to improve the quality of our water. So indigenous knowledge helps us to become the foundation of solutions that we develop and innovations. It helps us, when we start with indigenous knowledge, it helps for acceptance of the solutions that we bring. Because then it's something, when something is similar to what someone knows, it also triggers more and more innovation, more thinking outside the box, but also, like I said, acceptance. It helps us a lot it's easy for us to even scale, because when we start with indigenous knowledge, it helps us, people know these things. Like, for instance, for climate change, we're struggling with the issue of early warning systems. But then when we talk to people that have been around, they actually know some of the early warning systems. They know when they're going to have heavy rains, they know about the birds. then they'll tell you each time this bird comes, you just know we are most likely to have a very long dry season. So the indigenous knowledge helps us to have a foundation of where to start to design our innovation and also to come up with solutions. But also indigenous knowledge has helped us a lot to learn. As Uganda Women's War Initiative, we didn't know it all, but we've learned a lot. Like we learned how to hatch eggs without having to invest money into incubation machines, because most of our women do eggs. So we have indigenous knowledge for hatcheries, which helps us a lot to reduce on the cost of doing business. And the indigenous knowledge for hatchery, if you knew, you'd be amazed. So all these are things that because we allow for dialogues, we allow for people to talk, it helps us to reduce costs. It gives us a basis and a fountain to spring from. And it gives us the opportunity for acceptance and scale.
Laughing. Like you have really said it all. Actually, I just wanted to say on the cost, given that Uganda Women's Water Initiative, our budget is still limited. So by relying on indigenous knowledge, like Kafat has said, has really helped us implement initiatives at a very cheaper cost. Instead of hiring a trainer who is very expensive, there's this local woman who will know what do I need to do to make sure that maybe beans grow well while mixed or like intercropping with sweet potatoes. So by allowing these people, let us give us information and teach us what they know to adapt has made our intervention really cheap, helping us scale, like she has said. But you have said it all. Thank you so much.
And Godliver, you mentioned about having limited funds. So can you elaborate on what are the funding challenges that UE faces and just overall funding landscape?
I will just start on the limited funding. That is still a challenge with UE because we still depend on donors. However, donors for funding, and a lot is happening in the world right now, like what is happening in the US, because we have other funders like Women Earth Alliance from the United States, which is affecting really the budgets. But as UWI, one of the strategies that we are using is like I will still go back to the indigenous knowledge. So and also using locals to do these trainings or local available materials or using the government technical team to conduct training. This has made things cheaper for us, and also we are rest assured that at the end of it all, even if more funding doesn't come in, there will still be a lot of replication, ownership, sustainability, because we have created a system.
Then the other funding challenge is when you're a community-based organization, then you don't attract as much funding as the big boys. And yet we are the ones that are visible on ground. If you go to Gomba, even if you talk to the district officials and you talked about Uganda Women's Water Initiative, they'll tell you offhand what we do, what we've done, the impact we've had. But then for you to feel us, you need to really go to the community and talk to the people. We're not the big boys. So we don't get to attract the huge funding, but we are open to being sub-grantees. Because when you invest in us, you invest in the last mile person. Because since our model allows us to have more money going to the community as opposed to overhead costs. So for us, our funding landscape, we would want to move into a level where we have stable funding that can give us tangible results, especially creating visible, tangible results with schools where the girls that we interact with are. So we want to have stable funding that can enable us create a program. Because each time you create a project and the funding is small, then as you're beginning to enjoy the impact, you really don't have the funding to do the needed monitoring and evaluation, the needed supportive supervision to walk this through. And in life, things happen. So if you're not monitoring, it doesn't exist, and then we tend to lose out. But if you can have opportunity to design programs that continue for at least 5 years, that's where we see ourselves going, while also continuing to do what we do, working with government, make sure that the little that we do is ably harvested and replicated.
Well, it's interesting to know so many challenges and innovations and work that you do. And looking ahead, what are your thoughts about the future of water management and sustainability?
The future of water management lies in women, because women are naturals of nature. So the future of water management is really with women. And interestingly, even the Uganda government, you know, when you read our policies, you'll appreciate that the government actually knows about that. So right now in the country, we have something called the Operation and Maintenance Framework. You can access it online. It's called the Operation and Maintenance Framework. So this framework talks about multi-prong management of water resources. But then this framework does not strongly come out to talk about the nexus between water, climate change, like Godiva talked about, and how the management of each affects the other. So the few, in the context of adverse weather events that we are having, like now it's March. Normally March would be a heavy rainy season in our country. But when you get rain, we are lucky to have, so far we've received rain twice since the month, and the month is ending. So the future of water management has to be integrated water resources management. We have to look at conservation. We have to look at retention. When we have the rainwater, we have to look at how we can retain it longer so that there's absorption to recharge the aquifers. Even if we are told that the aquifers in Uganda are infinite, but it's only 46% of the water in Uganda is actually generated in the country. We rely on our neighbors. The water comes from our neighbors. What if something was to happen to the neighborhood? So the future has to be integrated water resources management. The future has to involve women who use the water. So really the future is involving women in management of water, but not just from when it's done, right from design, implementation, and the actual management. The future of water management is looking at the entire scope of water quality, water quantity, and the access of water. Because the quantity without quality, the water will become a driver of disease. And then quality, but with distance, still there's no access. Because even if I access water, but it takes me 1 hour, that's not access. We look forward to a future where water is brought closer to women using the available materials and resources and knowledge that is, can be easily replicated. And skilling, we call them handymen in water, Uganda Women's Water Initiative. We're looking at water resources management that uses local knowledge, artisans, handymen and women that have the knowledge and skills to manage their own water resources, as opposed to having this area service management that costs money and takes away time between the time that the water management is needed or when there's a breakdown. So using the people, skilling them to be able to and take on their own water resources management, and skilling them to be Godiva College capacity building their capacity to keep their records, have the knowledge, track the data, and using this data to really manage the water and make informed decision is the future. But key is the future lies with the women.
It's really hopeful when you come up with so many solutions for these challenges. And as we move towards the end of the conversation, one last question is, what advice would you give to the listeners who are passionate about water issues and want to make a difference in their own communities?
I think the advice I can give, I'll start with what Kafat has just said. Just involve and make women take lead, and then train them, skill them, and then use the indigenous knowledge, or also like use the local available resources to cut costs when it comes to implementation. And then also let them try to promote low cost solutions that can be affordable by even a rural woman who doesn't have a lot, like doesn't earn much. That's what I could say. Comfort coming, please.
I'll tell you that every dollar counts. Don't wait to have the millions before you step in there. Every dollar counts. We have done our math with Uganda Women's Water Initiative. For every $10, a child will have access to safe water in the school and a sanitation facility for 50 years. But that is coupled with what Godiva said. Use the right technology, but rely so much on local available materials and resources and knowledge. For instance, nature-driven solutions like use solar to drive water. In Africa, you never run out of the sun, especially Uganda. The rain and the sun happen in the same day. You'll have 2 hours of rain, the rest hours will be of sun. Every dollar counts, and please involve everyone. Involve the stop looking at communities as beneficiaries. They're not beneficiaries, they are partners. They have solutions, but you'll only get those solutions if you talk to them. Don't give them, work with them. Let them give you what they have, whether it's in kind, whether it's knowledge, whether it's the local materials that they have. When you give it to them, it's your project, it's not theirs. And once you leave, it will be called that Uwe borehole, that Uwe spring, that Uwe toilet. When you work with them, it will be our toilet, like a project we did that was called Our Clean Water. Another thing, we still work in era where there's a lot of culture, cultural beliefs that still drive. Culture is so strong, but I wouldn't urge anyone to go and abuse any culture, but work with the culture to have a bit of change or influence to have women being accepted as solution providers, water sanitation, and having women being accepted to climb those ladders to construct tanks. When you work with these cultural leaders, religious leaders, and appeal to the people's culture and how it relates with water, then it will work. From our work experience, we've come to agree that people will disagree on everything, be it politics, be it religion. But when it comes to water, people will always agree. So if you want to venture into water, look at water as the change. Change begins with water. Use it as your driver of change, and you'll get very many people rallying with you. And then use it, use water as the beginning of change, but also use it to cause change. Because when where there is water, a lot of things will change. Women don't have to walk long distances anymore, so they'll be more productive. Children don't have to leave school to go for water, and then they'll have high completion rate in school. So if you want to venture into that, that's the advice I would give.
Thank you, Kampa. Just the last one. If among my listeners, there's a funder, I would also say the advice I would give is that if they can give funding that is predictable, reliable, flexible, and accessible, then, and also like go deep down on ground and know what is the pressing need. I wish we could even avoid the intermediaries, like people in between, so that money can go directly to this rural woman so that she can put it to good use.
Well, thank you, Godliver and Comfort, for such a powerful conversation, inspiring solutions, and inclusive approach to your work. We look forward to your journey, and thank you so much.
More information on this locally led organization can be found in the podcast description, including their social media handles. Thank you for joining us.